Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. If you were paying attention, the announcer just told you my name, Tim Wildman. Tim Wildman, Ed Battagliano in studio with me. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. Good morning, Brother Fred.
Good morning. Good morning.
Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. I need some breaking news music. I don't know. Okay. Thank you, Ed. This is Fox News. Trump trial to end early for juror's dentist appointment to address toothache. So that's the earth-shattering news this morning from the latest Trump trial.
Well, and they may postpone tomorrow too. One of them has a hangnail, and you know, if this just keeps going until the election, that's just the way things work.
How long will this trial, this particular trial? This is the hush money trial, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's supposed to be four to 8 weeks, but. That may go a little longer.
You got another one have a toothache or a hangnail. You could drag this thing out.
Someone had to get their hair done, apparently.
But you know what's now we're kind of making fun of this, but remember, this judge would not postpone it even one day so that Trump could go to his son's graduation, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Well, as I read it, he said he might do that. Just depends on how the trial's going. That's what I'm reading about.
Oh, he might do it.
Yeah, he might do it. Talking about Barron's graduation ceremony. Yeah, that's what I read that the judge said. Just depends on how the trial's going.
All right.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, then I withdraw my objection, Your Honor.
But the dentist appointment for a toothache for one of the jurors, that sounds kind of crazy, except if you're the one with the toothache.
You ever had a toothache?
Yeah, it's you don't care crazy. About anything in the world. You have a toothache, a bad toothache, your world becomes very small.
Yes, it does. And if you're a man, the pain, you think you're getting a leg sawed off.
I know.
At least that's the way I am. You know, a little bit of my wife, good grief, she could be hanging on to life by a thread, and she doesn't make a complaint. She doesn't complain.
Yeah.
You know, but me? I get a little cold. Oh, sweetie, can I have some chicken soup?
She's a better woman. She's a better woman than I am. Of course, I'm not a woman. But anyway,
we don't do that
here. No, we don't do that here. we don't. Don't do that here. Absolutely. Well, we hope you had a great weekend, everybody. I, Allison, my wife, and I, we were out in Dallas on Thursday to meet with some folks who support our ministry. And then we drove to Rogers, Arkansas for another dinner on Saturday night.
And you mentioned how beautiful Arkansas is in that part
and
of the state.
Arkansas and Oklahoma. If I say the term mountains of Oklahoma, would you believe me?
No. I always think of it as flat.
Well, I know because the wind comes down, right? Whatever, what's the song for?
Well, the wind comes, what is it, roaring down the plains?
I think so.
Something like that.
But anyway, we drove from Rockwall, Georgia, Texas to Rogers, Arkansas. And we drove right through the mountains of the Ouachita. I think that's correct.
There is a Ouachita Baptist College.
Yes,
that part
in Arkadelphia.
Yeah.
But this is a mountain range right next door to the Ozarks. So I don't know when one ends and when the other one starts, but it just felt strange going through the mountains of Oklahoma because you just don't think of that.
It's like the mountains of Nebraska.
Yeah. Nobody lives there, by the way.
You know, is it like
the roads?
You mentioned
are great.
That in devotion this morning.
Yeah.
Is it because it's federal land or something or a national?
Well, I joke. There are just 13 people that live there. between the Oklahoma line
all related
and Fort Smith. I didn't say that, Fred.
No,
Ed, you said that.
Was it implying
they are related, but doesn't mean anything,
right? Absolutely,
unnatural's going on there. But Anyway, it was just it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful countryside there. And I thought, man, this is like nobody talks about this, but it'd be a great if you like camping, hiking, things of that nature.
They call it the natural state, right?
Yeah, well, that's Arkansas.
Yeah, okay.
Oklahoma's
So Wachita Mountains was in Oklahoma?
I think that's what they call it.
Okay.
Yeah, the Wachita Mountain Range, yeah.
All right.
It's just, look it up. It's a real place. Well, they say that from between the Appalachians and the Rockies, that's the highest place in the U.S. I'm talking about that Ozarks, Wachita Mountain Range there. Yeah, so anyway, pretty cool. All right. Thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Fred, what's our first story today?
Well, it's really interesting. Up on the screen on the TV we have in the studio here, we have four different networks. CNN, MSNBC, and BBC are all focusing on the Trump trial. Fox is focusing on what is going on the campus of Columbia University today.
In New York.
In New York. The president of Columbia University has told all students to stay home because they are worried about the safety of Jewish students on the campus. Now, you've heard reports about Jewish students there being told, don't wear anything that would tell the public that you're Jewish. This is the kind of thing that's going on right now. This hatred of the nation of Israel, of Jewish people, Jewish students on the campus, has just reached the point where the president of Columbia University is worried about their safety so much, we want you to stay home today and don't come into the campus at all. Yale University, riot police were called in this morning, Yale in Connecticut, called in this morning because there are more Jewish-hating protesters on campus there. In fact, there was a reporter for a student newspaper who is Jewish who was attacked there at Yale during the weekend. This is, you know, and this has been going on. And, of course, anti-Jewish, anti-Israel sentiment on university campuses has been going on for a long time. We've been doing stories for years.
Right.
But I think what has shocked, I would hope, most of the nation is within 48 hours after the massacre in Israel of more than 1,200 Israeli men, women, and children massacred by Hamas terrorists, there were pro-Hamas demonstrations on our university campuses within 48 hours. It's amazing. I was telling you guys this morning about a profile of at least four or five Columbia University professors who hate the Jewish people, hate Israel. And a lot of people, this has been a story that's been kind of shoved aside. One of them, Joseph Massad, professor of modern Arab...
Sounds like a good Irish boy.
Yeah. Professor of modern Arab politics and history. His response to the October 7th massacre of Jewish people, he said the Hamas terrorists, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Mohammed Abdu, visiting Columbia scholar, declared, yes, I'm with Hamas and Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad, all terrorist groups. Hamid Dabashi, professor of Iranian studies, under fire in recent years for a slew of controversial social media posts, including, quote, every dirty, treacherous, ugly, and pernicious happening in the world, just wait for a few days, and the ugly name Israel will pop up in the atrocities, he wrote. That's just an example. Four or five professors at Columbia University, they work there, they collect a salary, openly hatred of Jewish students, Jewish people, and the nation of Israel. Can you imagine for a moment if a Columbia professor got up in class and said, I think abortion is murder? Do you think they'd be allowed to stay up in front of that classroom? What if a professor got up in a Columbia classroom and said, homosexuality is a sin? It's an abomination. Do you think their tenure would protect them? Not for a second. But these professors are allowed to continue there. Is there any wonder, and this has been going on, not just at Yale, not just at Harvard. Remember, the Harvard president was fired back there a few months ago when she wouldn't give a, when she was asked, I think, by Elise Stefanik, what does the, I think, river to the sea mean to you?
Yeah, the chant.
The chant.
From the river to the sea.
Well, it can mean different things to different people. And, of course, Harvard says, of course, she was fired, but not really. She kept her job and her $800,000 salary. She's teaching in the law school there. And, you know, you shake your head and you say, what in the world is going on here? During the weekend, there were students, again, attacked at Columbia. One of them is Andrew Parker Stein, a Jewish student. I want you just to hear. He describes being Jewish on that campus. Cut number two.
A bunch of Jewish students came to campus to respond to the encampment. We just sang songs of peace. On the way out, a pro-Hamas mob started chasing us, calling us in the middle of campus, calling us inbred, that we have no culture. One of them grabbed my friend's Israeli flag in the middle of campus, carried it to a mob by the gate that were communicating with the angry mobs outside of campus. They threw hard objects at him. They started harassing him. They tried to light his flag on fire, and there nothing is done with this. And after that, on the way out, we were talking to public safety. They started following us on the way out, and public safety just shrugged their shoulder. They're supposed to, they're the ones who are responsible in protecting us. And the only protection that we had was we have one student who's a 6'5 student, and everyone hid behind him as we were leaving campus. And an angry mob of pro-Hamas students chased us off of campus, screaming, we don't want no Zionists here, get out of here.
All right, so first, I just want to say that we all have an expectation of free speech in America, including on college campuses. So the First Amendment does protect unpopular or even the saying of things that others might find offensive. Okay, what I find ironic first and despicable second, ironic first that the left has traditionally said certain ideas are not welcome on campus because they could lead to violence.
Mm.
Not they do lead to violence. They could lead to violence. This is why Riley Gaines has been, who is a former college swimmer who has had her career harmed by a transgender woman that is a male swimming. She now is a spokesperson against men competing in women's sports. She's chased off college campuses before. She's been assaulted when she's tried to speak before, okay? But the left always says, no, you can't invite a conservative on because it might lead to violence against transgender people, okay? Mm. So that's the first thing, is the hypocrisy of the left. The second thing is that when the left wants leftists to speak, my personal belief is they encourage violence, okay? So the you had mentioned earlier that that there was someone on the Yale campus, a woman who was Jewish.
Uh-huh.
She said, I'm looking for the story now because it's it disappeared from my here it is. Jewish Yale student stabbed in eye with Palestinian flag. Part of her complaint was that the students who are quote-unquote protesting against Israel wear these masks. They have a name for it. It's a, I guess, kind of like a bandana, a keffiyeh or something, that covers their face. To me, if you are rightly protesting on a college campus or speaking, you shouldn't be wearing masks. You should not have things over your face, because what this Jewish girl says, he had anonymity because of the keffiyeh. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. This bandana over his face. The organizers encourage anonymity at these events because it creates immunity so that students can physically assault people like me and then get away with it. And I believe that's absolutely true. And I believe the left is, most of the people on the left either are sympathetic with the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protesters, or they're afraid of them.
Yeah.
They're afraid of them. That's why they don't change the policies. They should be saying, if you're protesting on a college campus with something over your face, you'll be arrested. You want to protest? Fine. First Amendment, take it off your face. Mm-hmm. And then they should have the campus security arrest anybody who surrounds. I mean, this is a legal principle. If somebody gets close to another person within a certain number of feet, that is considered assault.
Yes.
You can't just walk up to someone and go nose to nose and then say, I didn't touch him, because that is an unsafe distance. Those people should be arrested. But I think the administration's either supportive or afraid. They don't want to get their buildings firebombed. All right? My rant's over.
But I,
sure?
I think it goes beyond that. I think there is a spiritual realm to all of this. The open hatred for Israel and the Jewish people takes us back to the days before World War II.
Right.
I think we've arrived at that point on many of these university campuses. You know, someone had made the point this morning, there were several arrests at Columbia University on Friday. The police moved in to remove a camp. As far as we know, not one student of these protesting students, these spewing hatred against the Jews students, has been expelled from the school. Not one.
And they've identified the students?
Oh, yes. Okay. They were arrested.
Oh, they were arrested but not expelled.
Okay. Yes. So they have their names. They know who they are. No expelled.
Well, your point about the rise of Hitler in Germany before World War II, really into the 30s, part of what happened is exactly what we see happening on these college campuses. They are telling Jewish students, hide your identity. And in Germany, as Nazism grew in influence, Jews did so. Some of them changed their names. They were hiding their Jewish heritage because of the growing hostility. And at some point, that wasn't good enough. And the Nazis, obviously under Hitler, started putting the yellow stars on them. And so when it's not an exaggeration to say what we see happening on these college campuses is the prelude, perhaps, to something much more terrifying for the Jews.
Yes. Well, yeah, we'll see if this spreads. These universities you mentioned, Yale and Columbia, they are liberal wackadoodle schools. Okay, they're far left, far left. Administrations and professors and their student body, and quite frankly, you know, a lot of the Jews are lefties, but now they're finding themselves going, wait a minute,
right?
These people hate us. They hate them because they would say because of what Israel's doing in Gaza, namely. But this goes back, you know, Israel's retaliating for what what Hamas did when they butchered, what was it, 1,100, 1,200 people?
1,200.
On October the what?
7th.
7th. So, and, you know, if you go back before that, then we could keep going back and back and back. The Hamas supporters are going to say, oh, yeah, but, you know, Israel, you know, made Hamas a place that was unlivable.
Yeah.
And put the Palestinians there, and so you can't blame them for being frustrated and acting out.
Yeah, and it's really not just the college campuses. I've noticed in the last several weeks, I would say a couple of weeks, these pro-Hamas protesters blocking highways, blocking
except in Florida.
Except in Florida.
You see what Governor DeSantis said?
That's the way it should be handled. Yeah.
You know, you have these Palestinian pro-Hamas protesters blocking airport entry in New York, Chicago, Seattle, maybe some other places as well. They tried it in Miami, and the cops pulled them off the street and piled them up on the sidewalk. Basically, they said you can protest. You have a First Amendment right to protest, but there are places you can do this, but you can't obstruct traffic.
Right.
You can't get in the middle of the street and claim you have a First Amendment right to that.
Right.
You don't. So that's what Governor DeSantis of Florida said. We're not tolerating that, and they're not. Right. So that did.
Well, if you don't do that, then you have scenes like we have seen in videos. I'm sure we all have, where truck drivers, for example, or people in vehicles that have to get somewhere, If the law does not take action, people will get out of their vehicles and take action themselves. Some of these protesters could get run over when someone loses their senses in a vehicle. And so that's why you can't have chaos in a free society.
Right.
The law has to take action when you have highways overrun by these protesters.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
Well, we kind of alluded to it a moment ago. Former President Trump is back in a New York courtroom this morning.
Is it cold in the courtroom? Because he was saying it was cold.
It was cold, yes. Yeah. Last week he was complaining about that. But as usual, you know, he made a statement, and he's been doing this. Even though he has a gag order on him, before he goes into the trial room each day, and when he comes out, he says, this is all a sham, this is a political witch hunt, et cetera, et cetera. Well, on Friday, 12 jurors and 6 alternates were chosen. They're in the courtroom today to hear the opening statements. And, a lot of the conservative legal analysts in all of this, and we've touched on this a number of times in recent weeks, they say this is all a sham. This is not a crime, what he's alleged to have done. He paid money for a non-disclosure agreement to a lady by the name of Stormy Daniels. But the accusation from the conservative side is that the New York prosecutor, a Democrat, has turned this in to a crime of paying money for a non-disclosure agreement. Anyway, we have a number of attorneys talking about this, including Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody, saying this trial doesn't make sense and there is no perception of fairness. Cut number 6.
Well, you know, this is quickly turning into trial by ambush. The fact that we're still discussing and waiting for a ruling on a judge regarding whether all of these other things can be considered in this trial, as Trump is trying to decide whether or not he thinks he can even take the stand and will be treated fairly. I mean, I've been a former judge. I've tried many, many hundreds of cases. A lot of this doesn't make sense. A lot of this is not fair. And at this pivotal moment in the course of our nation's history, you have to have a judge and a DA that are extraordinarily cautious about the perception of fairness, and we certainly don't seem to have that here.
There's not going to be any attempt to do what she just said. She's right. Mm-hmm. This is the
Florida Attorney General.
Attorney General
Ashley Moody.
You absolutely should want to, you know, fight for a perception of fairness, but because the media has almost completely gone over. The legacy media almost completely gone over to a pro-Democratic Party, mm-hmm. anti-Trump perspective. These individuals in New York City and Manhattan, whatever, Letitia James, Attorney General of New York, they don't have to fight for fairness because the media covers them and all their friends pat them on the back. Mm-hmm. So you have what's happening is that people are seeing that this is not fair. Now, I listen, if laws are broken, then you know you got to go ahead and uphold the law. But it seems clear to this non-lawyer, I'm talking about myself, that the prosecutors are taking what could be misdemeanors and trying to spin them up into felonies and trying to keep Trump off the campaign trail.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, and we shall return.
According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% of women reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they had received more support from others or had more financial security. And that's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. You see, the reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision and are being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them, which doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you not only support women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life and gives her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network live radio show here on AFR. Thank you for listening. If you want to send us an email, the address is comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net. And I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano and Fred Jackson. We're discussing the news of the day. And where were we, Fred? What are we talking about now?
We're talking about the opening day of the trial.
By the way, I don't even think the show needs you and me. Ed is rolling, son. He's rocking and rolling.
I am jacked up.
Yeah, you're jacked up. You got how many Diet Cokes you got going on?
I'm going on 2.5 right now.
That's what I'm talking about. So we just throw a word, or just pay word association. Ed will pay paragraph association.
It's like throwing a piece of bacon at a dog, man. I'm on it.
All right, go ahead, friend.
One of the other aspects of this trial, and there was an attempt on the opening day, even before the jury selection process began, the Trump lawyers asked for the judge to recuse himself.
Okay.
Because the records show he has donated money to the Democratic Party, but also his daughter raises money for the Democratic Party. Of course, the judge refused, but Fox legal analyst Greg Jarrett says there are rules about judges recusing themselves, and this guy breaks all the rules by saying, no, I'm not going to recuse myself. Recuse. Cut number four, recuse myself.
This judge was required under the Code of Judicial Conduct to recuse himself. Why? Well, because his immediate family member, his adult daughter, has a financial and economic interest in the outcome of her dad's case. In fact, you know, through her Democrat consulting organization, she and her clients have been fundraising in solicitation emails by citing the Trump prosecution in New York over which Incredible. Her dad presides. And they have raised, according to the New York Post, some $93 million.
Wow, I didn't know that about the fundraising.
I know. It's just hard to believe that this is going on in this country.
I mean, just two minutes for those who don't. I think most Americans have chosen sides on what they think about President Trump and these court cases. Well, I would say a majority of Americans probably think that this is unfair. Okay, I would say a majority of Americans. I have seen a survey recently. However, just 2 minutes here of what this is really about, because this isn't. It's basically come to Trump versus the left, right? Would you say that?
Huh? Yeah.
Okay, and that's a general observation. But what's the exact accusation here?
Well,
for those who don't know,
yeah, the accusation is that Trump had affairs with at least two women, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, is that her name? Karen McDougal, I think was an adult star. Anyway, I want to go there. He had an affair with them. Then in the run-up to the 2016 election, Stormy Daniels wanted to make that public. Now, Trump denies that he had these affairs. Stormy Daniels wanted to make it public. So she was paid $130,000. signed a non-disclosure agreement. It's hush money. This is the accusation. And here's the part that it would be prosecutable. It's not illegal to pay someone off.
Yeah, rich men pay women off all day, every day.
All the time.
Yeah.
Okay. But the accusation is that Donald Trump told Michael Cohen, his lawyer, pay her out of campaign funds or pay her yourself. I'll reimburse you with campaign funds or with business. Maybe it was some of it was business funds. And that they lied about the purpose of that expenditure in business records. So that's the way the charge is going. That's supposedly a misdemeanor to paper over your business records. But what the prosecution is saying is that it is a felony because it violates campaign finance laws. Of course, the government agency charged.
How so?
Well, that you are supposed, when you use campaign funds or you use business funds for campaign purposes, you've got to spell out the purpose of that expenditure. Now, the Federal Election Commission is in charge of deciding whether the election laws have been violated, said there was none of that in this case. So this is the local jurisdiction in New York saying, yes, it is. It's a felony. And we're going after Trump for felony charges.
So if this wasn't Donald Trump, the presidential campaign, the former president who's running for president again, you think this would even be an issue?
No.
Okay, that's kind of the bottom line on this thing.
Yeah,
I've described it this way: Trump was going 58 in a 55, and they gave him a $100,000 fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'd say $250,000 dollar fine.
Okay, what?
And trying to put you in jail.
We never would have heard anything about this had Trump not been running for president. You think?
Because to me, it's a federal issue, and the Federal Election Commission has already said, and the Justice Department,
right.
The Justice Department has also said there's no real law broken here.
Okay,
but that's not good enough for the lefties in New York.
Okay, well, he may have been going 55.
Yes, well,
55
right.
55 and a 55 if it's... Anyway, we'll see what happens here, but this... Now, are these women going to be called to testify?
I think so. I think they are going to be testifying in this trial. Is that what you have heard, Fred?
It's a possibility.
Yeah.
Can you pay them off not to?
No, they'd be under oath.
Or is that double?
They'd be under oath at the time if they...
Huh?
Oh, you want to pay them off to...
To not testify.
Yeah, huh?
So, anyway, I'm just trying to think of this, keep this from turning into a three-ring circus here.
Oh, it's coming, Jerry. It's the three-ring circus. Barnum and Bailey are already lining up with the parade of clowns.
Yeah. I just hope it doesn't get into, did you have an affair with this woman and she says yes and he says no? You know, type deal. And then they got to get into proving it and all that
and
stuff.
And then get into details.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, it's
you don't
probably going to take that.
You don't want that.
Yeah.
For the families.
Because Trump is saying he didn't. So I'm guessing these ladies have some sort of proof. You know, they have
receipts.
That's
what I'm talking about. That's when it gets into tabloid stuff.
Right.
Sorted stuff.
I think that's coming, too.
All right. Well, thank you, Ed.
Oh, yeah.
That positive, sunshiny outlook on the Trump trial.
Let me get you a Diet Coke.
For the next... few weeks. You think this thing goes on for a few weeks?
I think it will. I think it'll. Yeah. I think it will go. I think it'll go past a month,
depending on how many toothaches and the jurors have to get taken care of.
Let me ask you guys that the legal experts are saying they've looked at the law on this. If he is found guilty, he could go. They could put him in jail right away.
They won't do that. I don't think so. I think if he's found guilty. Now, listen, New York is, if I were Donald Trump, in retrospect, he probably would say this too. He should have got everything out of New York the day he won. He should have started moving everything to Florida, all his business interest, everything. But now, that would have been hard for him because he's identified with New York because he's a businessman, a high-profile celebrity businessman who made his name in New York City. So, and that's where he grew up, in Queens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been hard for him to do that. And maybe he couldn't have seen how bad this would get. So, you know what I'm saying? So, but in retrospect, you got to think, he's thinking, what am I doing? How am I ever going to get a fair shake in this liberal cesspool of New York State and New York City?
Okay, my personal opinion is, if he's found guilty, I think they will. I think they will arrest him. I understand what you're saying. I think, and I think it would be a huge political mistake. And this is clearly all about politics. I think Alvin Bragg, this Manhattan District Attorney, I think he's going to ask for Trump to be immediately incarcerated. And I don't know. He has Secret Service protection, right?
Yeah.
Trump. I mean, do they let the bailiff come and?
That's why I don't think. I hear you, but I don't think they'll make him pay some kind of fine and put him on some kind of probation or something like that. I don't think they're going to put him in a Manhattan jail. That's my opinion.
Well, we'll find out.
But you know, you got to get a guilty with 12 people.
Right.
I mean, all you need is one person to say, I don't agree with this, I disagree, and that's a hung jury.
Yeah.
So, your chances are one out of 12 are going to say, not enough evidence here to convict.
Right.
Anyway, go ahead.
It was interesting, this interview that Fox did this morning with their legal analyst, Greg Jarrett. The first question he was asked was about the jury. Apparently, there are several lawyers on this jury. And Jarrett believes that this could work in Trump's favor because these lawyers are going to, okay, what law was broken, to address what you were talking about a few moments ago? Define for me which law was broken. Because remember, initially, Bragg's, we don't have a case.
Yeah.
And then, as far as a misdemeanor goes, we don't have a case here.
Yeah.
So it bumps up into the federal judicial system, and all of a sudden there's a federal crime here. And so Jarrett is saying, because you've got several lawyers here, if they wish to abide by their ideals as a lawyer, let's just deal with the law that we're looking at here. He feels at least one of those lawyers is going to say this man is not guilty.
Okay, now let me just clarify something. Now, again, I'm not an attorney. This is my understanding of it, is that Alvin Bragg is not going to try to charge Trump on a federal crime in New York, although, you know, papering over your business records is a misdemeanor. It can be bumped up to a felony if the cover-up of the business records is meant to hide an additional crime.
Uh-huh.
Then it becomes a felony. So Alvin Bragg has to prove that Trump knew he was breaking federal law. That's why he papered over his business records. Then the New York case goes from misdemeanor to felony.
Right.
So that's my understanding.
So the way this went down, allegedly, is Trump, I'm just going to say he did have an affair, okay? He says he didn't. What is the definition of an affair? Is that a one-night stand, or is that a continual relationship? I don't know. But I'm just, for sake of argument, and then we'll move on here. So he's got these, at least two women that paying them off, or at least one of them he paid off. He told Michael Cohen, his lawyer, he said, well, she's going to spill the beans on your illicit relationship just weeks before an election, which might damage your chances.
Give her what she wants.
Give her what she wants. So that's, but I don't want to know about it, and I don't know how it takes place. Just take care of it. And listen, people of Trump's stature, I'm talking about super wealthy people, business people, they have fixers. That's what they call them. They're basically lawyers who take care of everything. Where you don't have to, and even your troubles, and they fix it. And a lot of times they fix it by paying people off. I mean, that's just the way of the world. Am I right?
No, that's right.
So he said fix it, and now, again, if he did, and then you got this accountant doing the money, and they're paying her off, but they're trying to hide it because they don't want it exposed, right?
Right.
But and if it's an NDA and non-disclosure, that's a whole point of it, just right. not to make something public, so you pay somebody off. And so the New York, the Manhattan DA, son, you can't do that because you're impacting the election by keeping this hidden from the public, right? So that's what he's saying. That's what the election interference.
It's both. It's illegal to mislead
use campaign
on your business
funds.
Forms.
Use campaign
right.
funds to pay off. That's what the thing is.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next story, Fred. We'll see where this goes, but it's going to last for weeks, I guess.
It's not going to be family friendly, I don't think.
No. Well, also, Michael Cohen. Excuse me for interrupting. Michael Cohen, the lawyer for Trump. He worked for Trump for how many years?
I don't know, but he spent, 18 months in jail?
He was Trump's top lawyer for a long time.
Yeah. I will look that up to see how long he worked for Trump. Let's see.
He was Trump's fixer, is what I'm saying.
He served as an attorney for former President Trump from 12 years, 2006 to 2018.
That's a tight relationship right there.
Yes.
For that long.
Served as vice president of the Trump Organization and personal counsel to Trump. That some of those positions may be scattered throughout these 12 years, but it has often been described as his fixer.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story, Fred.
You know, we have been doing stories about what's been going on in the United Methodist Church now for years. Tim, I remember doing AFA Report with your dad.
Yeah.
And we did programs back
then. Going on since the 90s.
Since the 90s. More than 7,000 United Methodist congregations have left the denomination.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily over the fact that they have a book of discipline which talks about the sin of homosexuality, and it's been ignored. That's one of the big issues that's been there. Well, this week, the United Methodist Church Council of Bishops is meeting, and they have elected a new president. Her name is Bishop Tracy S. Malone of the UMC East Ohio Conference.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Some interesting quotes. This is a Christian Post story on her. She said, "I will continue to provide leadership to the church that inspires hope, helps to unite United Methodist Church and our collective efforts to becoming a more inclusive, grace-filled church." She said she would deepen and expand our commitment to discipleship, mission, equity, and justice in the church and in the world. She says the United Methodist Church continues to have a thriving witness and missional impact throughout the world. So,
well, listen, I'm
looking at her words.
Yeah, I grew up in the United Methodist Church, as most everybody knows, because my dad was a UMC pastor. and my dad grew up in the Methodist Church, and before they merged with the United Brethren, I think, denomination. So the United Brethren and the Methodist Church merged in the 60s and became the United Methodist Church, which made them at that time the second largest Protestant denomination in the U.S. behind the Southern Baptist Convention. And so the Methodists have a long history in this country dating back to the, 1700s. I mean, the circuit riders who trailblazed the gospel across America, John Wesley, Charles Wesley, Francis Asbury. I mean, the tradition of the Methodist is rich in the United States. What happens in the last 30 years is that the, as happens to many institutions, those who subvert the scripture got in charge of the seminaries. This almost happened to the Baptist. You remember this?
Yes.
And then Paul Pressler and Adrian Rogers and all those those names may ring a bell. They fought back against it. You remember this? This
right.
That happened 1980s, in the
80s. Yeah.
But the Methodists, these far lefties and the ones who don't believe subvert scripture is what I say, the inerrancy of scripture, they started taking control of the Methodist seminaries and then the bishops and got many of them went left, and so the United Methodist Church does have what you call a book of discipline, right? And the book of discipline clearly says that homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. Incompatible, contradictory. Well, the Methodist Church leadership has decided we're going to ignore that. We're going to ignore that in our church, in our book of discipline. Well, this has been going on for, like, as I say, 20, 30 years, this coming to a head. It finally came to a head where churches have now decided, a lot of United Methodist churches, I don't know, I'm thinking it's 20% of them have left.
25%
of them have left and have left the denomination in the last couple of years.
And I've been looking to find out what the population, what the percentage of membership, individual membership that represents. I haven't found the numbers because it may be 25% of churches, but right. It may be 40% of the membership in the U.S.
There's some big, small, medium, and big churches have left over this issue because you had to. It came to a point where you had to decide, you know, because they were marrying gay folks and getting away with it. And the bishops were not doing anything about it. Listen, God loves gay people like He loves lesbian people. God loves everybody, but He does have standards of human behavior that God sets forth in the Scripture, and acting out on homosexual desires is sinful according to the Bible. That's been Christian teaching for 2,000 years. All right, so all of a sudden, the United Methodist Church, like some other denominations, mainline denominations, say, hey, God didn't really mean that. 2,000 years of teaching on human sexuality, we're going to throw out the window and say God embraces everybody, whatever they want to do, right?
Right.
Thus, when they use the words like inclusivity, is that what they use?
Inclusive equity, justice in the world.
That means no moral standards. Basically, we're going to have no moral standards when it comes to human sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
We're ditching that because people can do whatever they want, act in any way they ever want, and God's going to bless that.
You know what's interesting about the word justice, because you mentioned some of these words being used to describe the incoming.
That's head, her words.
Her words.
Yes.
This word justice gets thrown around a lot.
Yep.
Now, folks, you're listening. You've read in the Bible, especially in the prophets, the word justice is used. Okay, so you may be getting confused as to, well, what's going on? Well, the word justice in the Bible means righteousness, okay? The Bible speaks of individual righteousness, and it speaks of community righteousness. Righteousness means acting right before God. So when the word justice is used in a translation you're reading, it's referring to a group of people acting in a way towards one another that is right in God's eyes. Well, what the left has done in the United Methodist Church and other Christian denominations is take that word and say, no, justice doesn't mean what's right in God's eyes. It means what's right in our eyes.
Yes.
And we'll determine what justice is. Because if you talk about justice as it's used in the Bible, you cannot give a thumbs up to sinful behavior. But it is confusing to Christians when they come across a word, you know, in Micah or Amos or something. Well, they're talking about justice. Am I wrong here in terms of homosexuality? No. Justice in the Bible means righteousness in a corporate sense, how we behave towards one another. It doesn't mean everyone gets to do what they want and you've got to be okay with it.
Yeah. So the bottom line is that the denomination is suffering, is hemorrhaging. The United Methodist Church, and it's as I said. Now a lot of these churches are joining the world. Well, I better not say because I've forgotten. A lot of these ex-United Methodist churches are joining.
It's an African-based group, I believe it is. Yeah,
the United Methodist Church or the Methodist Church around the world, generally speaking, is very conservative.
Right.
It's very conservative.
It's American. The American church is
right.
Gone astray, gone awry. But you look at the we mentioned this before, the denomination, of course, denominations don't have as much sway as they used to in the U.S. because there's so many independent churches now. But the, you know, the denominations that were all across America, the Presbyterian USA, which used to be called just the Presbyterian Church,
the Episcopalian Church,
the United Methodist, the Lutheran Church. I mean, these are churches that are historic denominations across America, and there are others who have who've done the same thing the United Methodist Church has done, and you know what? They're dying.
Right.
They're dying because people are not going to come to a church that doesn't believe in anything.
Right.
If you don't believe in anything, really, you don't believe
Stay home.
Well, especially if you, more specifically, if you don't believe in the authority of the Scripture.
Right.
Of the Holy Bible, if that's not to take preeminence in your church is going to die.
Right.
Now you'll find every once in a while some church will grow because of some warped teaching, but generally speaking, if a church starts denying the authority of the Holy Bible, it will eventually die out. All right,
Methodist Church is what you're thinking.
The Global Methodist Church is the one that these ex-UMC churches are joining.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.